Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. The deadly cases of E. coli contamination in Germany, which have killed 23 people and sickened more than 2,000, including one recent American traveler to Germany who is now hospitalized in Massachusetts, raise troubling questions about food safety. And the fact that most food is not grown locally and comes from all over the world poses big challenges to local health officials here in Massachusetts and across the country.
The Centers for Disease Control estimates that foodborne disease causes 48 million illnesses per year. And about one in six Americans get sick from bad food. While many of these cases are not serious, every year hundreds of thousands of Americans do end up in hospitals because of food poisonings.
Which brings us to today's talker. How safe is our local food supply? Do you worry that what happened in Germany could happen here? And do you have questions about food safety, specifically about E. coli contamination? You can give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We've got a great panel of folks to answer your questions and to talk about a little bit about what's going on. Joining us, first of all, Jeff Benedict. He's the author of Poisoned, the True Story of the Deadly E. coli Outbreak That Changed the Way Americans Eat. And Jeff Benedict, great to have you on Radio Boston.
Hey, it's great to be back. Thank you.
Yeah, and I should say, Jeff, you're joining us from a little bit south of us. I know you're originally from Connecticut, but you're down in Virginia now. That's correct, right?
I am on an organic farm today.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about why that makes so much sense, especially these days. Also joining us is David Thino. He's a food safety consultant and CEO of Gray Dog Partners. He's also a former senior vice president and chief product safety officer at the Jack in the Box restaurant chain, which had an E. coli story, which we're going to get to in a moment. And David Thino, you're in San Diego. Do I have that right?
Yes, I am.
Well, welcome. Welcome to Radio Boston. It's good to have you.
Well, thank you for having me today, and I look forward to our discussions.
Yeah, and so let me start the question this way. As we hear about these contamination stories 3,000 miles away in Europe, let me start with you, Jeff Benedict. What alarms you the most about the story we're hearing out of Germany about these E. coli cases?
Well, obviously, like everybody else, you'd like to see the officials there be able to identify the food source or the vector of the contaminant, and that really hasn't been done yet. But the other thing is that's really troubling is that there hasn't been really good information sharing and networking, and actually a lot of the things I think that were exposed in the Jack in the Box outbreak back in 93 that really showed where the weaknesses were in the system in the U.S., it sure looks like a lot of those weaknesses are still in existence in Germany. And that's not a good thing for consumers.
Hmm. And Dave Thino, let me ask you, why is it so difficult to trace the origins of this? I know it wasn't easy to do that here, and I want to get to this Jack in the Box case in a moment. I know you were involved in that. But why is it so difficult to trace the origins of this in Germany?
Well, first, I want to tell you that Jeff's statement is absolutely accurate, that there were a lot of gaps in the system in the Jack in the Box days about information communication and state to state and things like that. And I think it's just exacerbated with what's going on in Europe, where you've got a number of not only different states, you've got different countries and trade implications. And I think there's a lot of politics going on there that are getting in the way of actually doing the tracing. And what scares me about Europe is that it is frighteningly similar on the front end of it to what was going on at Jack in the Box. And until they really can identify the source, they can't absolutely guarantee that they've stopped it. And at this morning's tally, it sounded like there were 2,500 plus people sick, and I think I read 22 fatalities and almost 700 people with HUS. I mean, this is
HUS being a strain of E. coli, correct?
No, HUS is a complication. It's called hemolytic uremic syndrome.
I see.
And in essence, it's one of the pieces of the illness, and it basically clogs the kidneys with small microclots of blood, and the kidneys shut down. And it this happens with the other organs. It's just that the kidneys are most susceptible because they are filters. And probably of these fatalities, the vast majority of them died of renal failure. Mm-hmm. And all of these people with HUS are going to have to be watched for protracted periods into the future because for many of them, their kidney function will be compromised for the rest of their lives.
I know it's a serious illness that this stuff brings about. We've been making reference to this Jack-in-the-Box case. Jeff, I know you're both involved in big ways, and let me start with you, Jeff. Your book, Poisoned, tells the story of this deadly E. coli contamination case. This happened back in 1993. Hundreds of people were sickened. I gather most of them were children. It killed four of them. What did that case do to our understanding of E. coli and how we handle food safety in this country? Jeff Benedict.
Well, yeah, I think before I answer that, I should just say so that the listeners know that that's how I met Dave Thino, your other guest here, and he's one of the main people in the story, Poisoned. It was just really a privilege to work with on the book. But basically, you know, prior to 1993, consumers didn't even know what the word E. coli was, certainly what it meant, or that it was possible to get it from eating a hamburger or any other food product. The only people who knew that in 93 were people like Dave and certain insiders who were either in the industry, in the CDC, certain microbiologists, and even very few health officials that knew much about E. coli. So when this outbreak hit, it was like a massive blindside to consumers, and it scared people big time because the idea that you could actually die from eating an undercooked, contaminated hamburger was a frightening reality wake-up call. And so there were congressional hearings. There was a massive public awareness campaign that wasn't really planned. It was just that the media coverage on this case was so big. It was nonstop for weeks and weeks, and the congressional hearings and the lawsuits that followed kept this thing in the news for a long time, and that was bad news for Jack in the Box as a company, but it was good news in terms of getting some of what I would say are the first real substantive changes to food safety regulations since the publication of The Jungle. Mm. So it was a long time.
Now, Dave Thino, you were brought in to Jack in the Box, and you very much sort of took this matter in hand. What did you find there? What had to change when you got there?
Well, as Jeff said, because this was kind of a new threat that showed up at the gate, a lot of things had to change. And I was fortunate that I was actually doing research that was funded by the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, looking at herds and processing plants and ways to identify and eliminate E. coli 015787, the bad actor that caused all the illnesses. And that's one of the reasons I was actually hired by Jack in the Box, because I had some expertise with it. But we found that we needed to change things in the beef industry about how we thought about things. Some of the research I was doing on interventions in plants needed to be implemented ASAP. Practices in the restaurants needed to change. It basically, everything that you knew about how you handled hamburgers from start to finish changed with that outbreak.
And some of this stuff is pretty basic, and we take it for granted now. I mean, you'll see the labels on the packaging, like, don't handle this. You got to clean up the counters afterwards. You've got to make sure it's cooked through, this sort of thing, right? Pretty basic stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, if I'm going to give out one good consumer tip right in front of the barbecue season,
yep.
One of the things is people will take hamburger patties or raw meat of any sort out to the grill on a plate, and they'll grill, and it's not uncommon to see people put the cooked product right back on that plate. And whatever was on that raw product is still on that plate, and so you recontaminate everything. So for all the Boston listeners, please take two plates out, one clean one and one with the raw meat, and then after you're done grilling, place the finished goods, the finished cooked product, on the clean plate.
Listeners, we're talking about food safety, about E. coli contamination with this outbreak in Europe, what it tells us, and we're really trying to consider how far we've come and how safe our local food supplies are right here in the Boston area, across the country in general. You can give us a call and join the conversation. Joining us is Jeff Benedict. He's the author of Poisoned, and Dave Thino. He's a food safety consultant. We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And let's take a couple of calls. Rebecca is calling from Chelmsford. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, Anthony. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a quick question. I do remember the Jack in the Box outbreak, and listening to what you guys have been saying about meat, I've always associated E. coli contamination with meat products. Now I'm hearing so much of it coming through produce, and as a vegetarian, of course, I'm concerned. So I was wondering if you guys could address that, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Sure. Let me start with you, Dave Thino. That sounds like a good question for you to pick up on.
Well, thank you for the question, Rebecca. The work that the meat industry did in many ways has reduced the likelihood of being exposed through meat. But these E. coli's that are, they call them STEX, and they're shigatoxin producing that cause the illnesses, they are fairly ubiquitous out in nature, and they are harbored by mammals, warm-blooded animals, whether it's livestock or wildlife, deer. The spinach outbreak here in California was at least tentatively identified as being caused by wild pigs out here that had gotten in the field. And produce is, of course, the big challenge today, because you're cooking hamburger patties. Fresh green produce, most people do not cook produce. And so it needs to be properly cleaned. First of all, there's good agricultural practices that can preclude contamination in the field, control of water sources and wildlife and the like. And then processors have a due diligence for all these bagged spinaches and leafy greens. They can wash and clean them up, and there's some very good work going on there. And then consumers, even at home, people ask me all the time, well, how can I clean it up? Should I dump bleach on it or something like that? And that's not a good idea. But certainly cleaning your produce and fruits and vegetables at home with running water and rinsing them off is prudent. And if you've got things like lettuce or cabbage or whatever, peeling the outer leaves, and so that you know, are doing everything you can to get any external contamination that they could have gotten from the field or in the harvest process separated from what you're going to serve as food.
I see. Jeff Benedict, let me come to you. I know your solution down there in Virginia, I understand writing the book Poison pretty much changed the way you think about production of your own food for your own family, right?
Yeah, I was probably one of the worst consumers in terms of my practices prior to getting involved in this. But you know what we do now, and working on this book had a lot to do with that. But we grow as much of our own produce as we can here. What we don't grow, we try to buy from local farms that are within 20 miles of our home. And we're fortunate to live in a part of Virginia where there are a lot of. Some of the farms are organic, but there's a lot of small farms here that produce great chicken, great beef, great produce. And then, you know, when you're in grocery stores, and we still obviously shop at grocery stores, but we just try to be really particular about the groceries we buy. And we try to buy things that are produced fairly local. And I think grocery stores today, I was in a Whole Foods up in Washington, D.C. yesterday, and you know, it's interesting how much of their produce had come from local farms. And I think that that's a healthy trend in, you know, in the American food movement.
Is local and organic, though, necessarily safer when it comes to these kinds of these kinds of problems?
Well, I would say that, you know, obviously there have been well-documented cases of food poisoning from food products that have come from organic farms. So it just because you're buying organic doesn't mean you're never going to get food poisoning. But the fact of the matter is the risks, I think, go way down. And I think there are a lot of reasons besides food safety to encourage consumers to try to buy local and to service local farms and farmers markets. Mm. There's a lot of benefits to it. And the other thing to keep in mind is when a local farm or a farmer's market does sell a product that has a contaminant in it, typically it doesn't get very far. And the scope and reach of the outbreak is pretty limited and pretty small. And so that's a big difference from buying a product that's, you know, these big leafy green outbreaks are typically associated with a much bigger scale farm, if you will call it that. And it gets into the chain of distribution and can go to many, many, many states. When you buy something at a farmer's market, it's not going anywhere typically outside the, you know, the 20 or 30 mile radius.
Let me bring another voice into this conversation. Susan Reif is the managing editor of the website usfoodsafety.com. It's based right here in Massachusetts. And Susan Reif, thanks for joining us. Thanks for waiting so patiently.
Thank you for having me.
So, Susan Reif, if I understand, I read a little bit about your website. You watch food recalls, provide sort of a clearinghouse about information about recent recalls and food safety issues. Give us a sense of what you see out there, any trends, any foods that seem to be particularly problematic.
Well, there's always ground beef, and it always seems to happen right before a major holiday like Memorial Day. There was a ground beef recall, getting back to poisoned and our other two guests. There are no trends with food recalls, unfortunately, and we are very lucky here in Massachusetts that the E. coli outbreak in Germany probably won't hit us here. And the reason is because it's the summertime, and a lot of our produce is coming from local sources. So I think our listeners in Massachusetts don't have to be worried about the Germany E. coli outbreak. I think we're safe. I actually spoke to a local produce distributor here in Massachusetts this morning, and he said to me, no, we're fine. He said, we're lucky that it's the summertime.
Well, I'm glad to, I mean, that sounds like positive news. Dave Thino, I want to get you to chime in there. Does that sound, as a food safety consultant, do you agree with that? Does that sound like we can be pretty confident that what's going on in Europe isn't going to make its way over here?
Oh, yeah. The as Susan said, this is, you know, our harvest season, so we're probably net exporting most fruits and vegetables at this stage. So what's going on over there? We won't be importing those goods over here, although we did have some U.S. citizens that returned that were affected in Germany. What scares me about this whole deal in Europe is I want to get an answer to the question, could have this happened here?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that our regulatory agencies and our public health people, CDC and FDA and USDA, need to take a very good look at this. And if we have gaps in our system, as Jeff indicated earlier, we need to close those gaps.
Well,
you know, it's a warning sign for sure.
Yeah, and Jeff Benedict, chime in here, because my understanding, and speaking of warning signs, is there are at least six or seven strains of dangerous E. coli out there, but that we only track and test for one in this country. Is that right, and is that a concern?
I mean, yeah, Dave and I have actually talked offline about this a lot, and it's, yeah, and that's why I wrote the piece I did Sunday in the New York Times, is that it's true, I agree with Susan, we don't have to worry about the outbreak in Europe, but what we should be not only worried about but working on is the fact that there are six or maybe seven strains out there, we call them the big six, that are in our food supply right now, not to the degree that the 0157 strain is, but there have been documented cases. There was a fairly significant one just last year that reached into 12 states and it involved leafy greens. And the fact is that right now, I think the USDA and the FDA are ready to support wider testing of these additional strains of E. coli and to have them declared adulterants, which would require testing and require health officials to report documented cases. But the funding has not been approved for that and the support for it at the congressional level and at the, and frankly, this is not a Republican or Democrat issue, because it's a Republican Congress that's slow to fund it, and it's the Obama administration that's been slow to fund it. And so it's not partisan, but it's silly, because this is dangerous stuff. And if you don't look at Europe as a warning sign for us, I think you're being reckless.
Hmm. Well, go ahead, Dave Thino.
Well, there's an interesting thing going on right now. The USDA / FSIS, who really runs meat and poultry in the country, has proposed a control methodology for these big six. And at this stage, my guess is they've added number seven, our bad actor in Europe. And it went over to Office of Management and Budget. And basically, it's been just pigeonholed over there because of they're looking at economic impacts and stuff like that. And I would ask people at OMB the question, if they were responsible for food safety today and with what's going on in Europe, why would you not move this ahead?
Well, it's a good question. We'll try to get that to them. Maybe that's another discussion that we'll have another day here. Let me come to you, Susan Reif. Are there any foods out there? I mean, again, this is from looking at the information you see on your website. Are there any foods out there that you would just outright avoid?
That's a very interesting question.
And I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No, I avoid frozen hamburgers, and I never did before I read Poisoned, but I want to know my butcher. I want to know where I get my meat from. I really rarely, if at all, buy packaged meat that comes into the grocery store. I really want to know where the meat comes from. That's not to say that there may not be a problem with my local butcher at some point in time.
Sure.
But I want to take the necessary safeguards for my family and make sure that we can eat products that, in my mind, are safe. Ordering hamburgers out, maybe on occasion, but is there things that are absolutely off my list? Absolutely not.
All right. Well, I think we're going to have to end it there because our time is running out. But Susan Reif, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you
we really
for
appreciate
me.
It. That's Susan Reif. She's the managing editor of the website usfoodsafety.com. Also joining us from San Diego, Dave Thino, former senior vice president and chief product safety officer at the restaurant chain Jack in the Box. He's now a food safety consultant. Dave Thino, thanks so much for joining us.
Anthony, thanks for having me today.
I appreciate it. And Jeff Benedict, author of Poisoned, the true story of the deadly E. coli outbreak that changed the way Americans eat. Jeff Benedict, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming back.
Great to be back on with you again, Anthony.
All right, take care. Thanks as well to those of you who called. And listeners, you can continue the conversation on our website, radioboston.org. Still ahead on the program, our Common Health segment considers end-of-life care, easing the pain with MDMA or ecstasy. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.